All right, welcome back to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Today's guest is Joey Greeny. Joey is the Major League Strength and Conditioning Coach for the Tampa Bay Rays. Joey's been a strength and conditioning coach for 15 plus years in professional baseball. So, Joey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hey, look, so me and Joey go way back. Joey was a strength coach with the Royals when I was there. So that's how me and Joey first got to meet. I think we mostly had a lot of discussions on strength and conditioning stuff back in Arizona. That sound about right?
We did. That takes us way back. We're talking 2008, probably 2009. I remember at one point you were in rehab and we spent a lot of time together and a lot of time in the weight room going over different training topics. I mean, we talk all the time about conditioning and strength training and, but yeah. I remember.
Yeah, I had a lot of questions for you back in the day, trying to figure some of this stuff out, right? Hey, so look, Joey, we're gonna start off using your expertise here. I want you to discuss like some in-season versus off-season strength and conditioning guidelines for players, and you can take us on a journey like with progressions if you want, from like maybe like the early teenage days all the way through if you like, but just kind of structure it however you want with that.
Yeah, so to keep it basic and simple, when you approach the off-season months, that's a time to push some volume, push more volume in the weight room. You're probably looking at repetitions between 8, 12 on your major strength exercises. But it's a good time to push volume, push some work capacity, focus on general training, general fitness, and then as you approach your season, you're coming into preseason, you want to get a little more specific in your training. So after your initial, general preparation, general fitness, you want to move into your more specific strength training work as you get closer to preseason. So for the main movement, you're looking at 5 to 6 repetitions. So you're going to add a little more weight. So your intensity goes up as you approach your preseason and your season. And then you gradually move into, 2 to 3 repetitions. You can superset those with some plyometrics. So everything's getting a little more explosive as you get into to preseason. In season, you can start adding some accommodated resistance with some bands and start doing some more speed work with those on your main movements. And then as you approach your in-season, beginning of the season, we like to do like a 2-week little taper at the beginning of the season with opening day and any travel that's involved. We kind of like let guys kind of get back into the in-season workflow, so to speak, and then during the season we'll stay between the 2 to 5 rep range on the main movements, but we do push the intensity during the season. We want to keep guys strong, keep guys explosive. We include plyometrics, med ball work throughout the course of a season. I mean, it's a long in-season phase, so we have to keep guys motivated, keep them consistent. And I think that's one of the biggest things. If you're consistent in your routine, you put yourself in the best possible position physically at the end of the season to help team win.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hey, so I've got a few questions off of some of the stuff you just said. When you're talking about your big lifts or general lifts or what have you, can you explain to everybody like what you mean when you say that?
Yeah. So focusing on like the main movements, big lifts, I'm referring to any type of squat movements. So it could be a front squat, a back squat, a rear foot elevated split squat, or just a split squat. Any of those main movements could be a trap bar deadlift. It could be a reverse lunge. If any of those lower body, those are some main movements, RDL, something where you can load some weight. Or you can go a little more volume on those in the off season. And then as far as upper body main movements, dumbbell press, dumbbell rows, cable rows, pull-ups, chin-ups. You can do weighted pull-ups or chin-ups. So those are kind of the main move. Any overhead pressing. We like to do like half-kneeling, landmine presses, kettlebell. So those are the main.
Yeah. So look, you just mentioned overhead pressing, and I've got to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole here with you. I get a lot of pitchers that come in that not only, well, as you know, in the past, like there's been a lot of discussion around bench pressing for pitchers, but in addition to that, a lot of these guys are super, super fearful because of stuff they've been told, and they do not want to lift overhead in any way. What would you say to those pitchers, especially, that are just completely fearful of overhead lifting? Do you think it's a good idea? Why or why not? Just I'll leave it up to you with answer that one however you want.
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at, you know, any overhead athletes, I mean, their arms pretty constantly over their head, right? They're throwing. If you look at tennis players. So if you're not strong in that position, that's where you see potential injuries occurring. I mean, if you're not strong in that overhead position. So we like to incorporate different overhead movements. You know, you can do single arm, single leg, dumbbell overhead presses. You can do bottom up kettlebell presses. But yeah, there's nothing, or landmine presses, there's nothing wrong with pressing over your head. Now, just like everything else, you got to be smart about it. You don't want to, overload that movement, just like you would on a squat or if your body can't handle the load. So being smart about it. But yeah, I would definitely incorporate some type of overhead pressing in the off season and in season if you're an overhead athlete.
Yeah, perfect. And just so if anybody's listening, I hope that makes a lot of sense. And surely if overhead lifting is a good idea, then certainly horizontal pressing with like bench press type movement, not necessarily a barbell. I don't mind a barbell, but a lot of guys just don't want to lift heavy at all in a horizontal press. So certainly if you're saying to go heavy with overhead pressing, horizontal pressing is also a good idea, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can do dumbbell presses, any type of push-up variation. As far as bench press, you can do a bench press too. I know they make Kabuki Strength makes a Cadillac bar, so it kind of puts your hands in a different position, so it helps your shoulder in that aspect as far as any horizontal pressing. But yeah, you can do a horizontal pressing just like everything else. To be smart about it, make sure you focus on proper form. You know, you want to get, you know, strong in you want to strengthen those muscles, and yeah, there's nothing wrong with horizontal pressing.
Perfect. Hey, just real quick, we don't need to spend much time on this, but you mentioned some words like volume and intensity, and certainly, like, I understand those things, but just in case some people don't understand what you mean when you're talking about volume and intensity, with volume, you're talking about like reps and sets, correct?
Yeah. So with volume, it's just the amount of work that is being performed during it for an exercise or for the total workout. So that's the amount of total repetitions. And if you did between 8 and 12 repetitions, 3 to 4 sets of an exercise. Whereas if you look at in season, the volume is going to go lower. It's going to be less volume, but more intensity. So volume, you'll do more volume in the off season. So think of 3 sets of 10. And then when you hit the in season months, think about 3 sets of 3, 3 sets of 5, but you're lifting heavier weights at 3 repetitions, at 5 repetitions than you would at 8, 10, or 12 repetitions.
Yep. Perfect. All right. So let's talk about how you would go about progressing from like the early teenage days through like college, getting into professional baseball, starting with those younger years. I assume you're just talking about more like general strength training as we progress into some more specific work, if you will.
Yeah. So, you know, younger athletes, you'd focus on general strength training, general fitness, including plyometrics like jump training, work on landing mechanics where you fall off a box, land properly. I mean, it's everything that you should have learned when you were at the playground, jumping off the monkey bars, jumping rope, climbing trees, general fitness, general strength training, play multiple sports when you're younger.
Joey, you're talking about something that I've got to hear a little bit. So you mentioned that stuff they should have learned on a playground growing up. And I have been a big proponent of telling people one of the best things you can do for your kids, if you want long-term athletic development, is unstructured play, right, when they're younger. And we face a real challenge. All of us are in this thing together, right? Like me being on the private sector, dealing with training, it's something I have to take into account. And I know it doesn't always make sense to some people, but kids don't get the same level of play, and especially unstructured play, that maybe you and I had coming along, right? So I have got to do some things very differently inside of training now to basically combat that stuff right there. And I just kind of want to get, is that something that you see as well being a trend in our culture or society today?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with the athletes I work with, I mean, they're established major leaguers, right? So it's a little different athlete at the top. But when you see the players come through the high school level, getting drafted, coming into different organizations, you know, if they did not go to college or big school, big university that has a good strength and conditioning program, then you see some athletes that are physically behind, you know, as far as strength training. So you got to take them through the basics and learn, you know, how to decelerate, change direction, perform just basic strength training movements, push-ups, step-ups, that type of stuff. We see kids come from different parts of the world. Same thing, where strength and conditioning was not included either in their school, their high school, and you know, and then we get that, you know, through the professional levels. We do see kids that, you know, worked on a farm, that were really active, had to take care of farm animals, had to work on a farm, dig ditches. So they have a greater deal of strength training and conditioning background, even if they never went into a weight room, but just performing the manual work on the farm. We see kids that are coming in through that side, very strong, very, very explosive.
Oh man, I can't love what you just said anymore. You know, strength doesn't have to be built in a weight room, right? And I think we lose sight of that at times. I had a kid that trained with me a year ago that literally worked on a farm all day, and he would come in and he would say, "All right, what do I need to do for strength training?" And it was always the same thing. You don't need to do anything for strength training. We need to work on like how you handle eccentric loads now at high intensities, right? That's what we're going with. We don't need to worry about your strength. Your strength is not an issue, right? So I love that answer. But we're going to transition here a little bit. Actually, I have one more question for you. You mentioned this deceleration stuff and the lowering of movements. How much or how differently do off-season workouts get structured? Like, are you focusing on eccentric movements more or isometrics? Is there something that you value more in an off-season environment versus an in-season environment when it comes to eccentric, isometric, concentric?
Yeah, I would say I would value one or the other more. You can use it in both off-season and in-season training. After about 2 weeks of the initial off-season general prep, then you can start incorporating some slow eccentrics on certain movements, probably right around. You can do about a 3-second eccentric, work up to where you're doing five to 8 second eccentrics, so the slowing portion of the movement. I wouldn't do that in the, you know, the first thing in the initial off season.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, for anybody listening, don't jump in. If you've never done eccentric training, that stuff is taxing on the body.
Yeah, absolutely. So give yourself a little, you know, in the off season phase, a little general prep, you know, give yourself about 2 to 3 weeks of some general training, and then you can start incorporating some eccentrics, start around the 3 second mark, and then build yourself up into the 5, 7, 8 seconds. And same thing with the isometrics. And then you can, during your strength phase, I would start incorporating isometric holds. Younger athletes, you know, middle school, high school, these are great to do. You can even hold them a little bit longer, 20 to 30 second isometrics, body weight for very, very young athletes. But then even in the in season, we use eccentrics. You know, it's a great time just to focus on form and technique, is to tell that athlete, hey, slow the movement down. Let's go 3 to 4 seconds eccentric, slow that movement down. You get that muscle more time under tension, and then you explode up to the bottom. Same thing with isometrics. You can incorporate those. They're great for different hamstring work, especially back work for pitchers on any type of row. I'll tell my athletes, hey, give me 5 second pause at the top, you know, and you count it out for them. 1, 1,000, 2, 1,000, 3, 1,000. And then you do 5, 6 repetitions of that. So it's great to incorporate, you know, off season, you have a little more time. When you do these eccentrics, you will most likely get sore. So just keep that in mind. So it's great to throw those long eccentrics where you're at 5 seconds during the off season. In season, you could probably hit 3 second eccentric and some isos also in the in season.
Yeah, perfect, perfect, perfect. I've got some high school kids finding out the hard way right now. Hey, so I said one more question, but I've got one more. There's some talk about the idea of like elbow extension. And what I'm talking about there really is like a shot put type throw with medicine balls in season. Is that something that y'all are cognizant of at all, like to where you're shying away from maybe some elbow extension work in the weight room with pitchers during an in-season portion of throwing?
Yeah. I mean, the amount of volume, you know, practice and games that you're doing on the in season, I would probably, you know, limit the amount of volume that you do of those rotational shot put med ball throws. But you could, if you want to include those, I would include those in like your little warm up, your preparation, your pre-throwing preparation routine. You know, you can probably do one set, two sets of those just as a warm up. But I wouldn't overload those much in season. I would probably include those more to beginning of your preseason. I would start incorporating, you know, all your rotational work, med ball throws, rotational, explosive movements, probably right around the right as you approach kind of mid off season. As you come upon your preseason.
Nice. So you mentioned rotation. So how important is anti-rotation?
Yeah, anti-rotation is important. You know, as far as you can do different core exercises, limit that rotation, especially if you're rotating constantly from the preseason on. You know, some of the younger athletes, they may have a shorter season. But as far as like professional players, you know, they, you know, playing 162 games, you're throwing every single day. So we do focus on a lot of anti-rotational work, anti-extension, since they're rotating all the time.
Yep. Perfect. Perfect. All right, Joey, before now I'm calling you Joey because we're on a podcast. Look at me. Greeny. Greeny, y'all do something really cool with the Rays that we've got to talk about. And that is how you're utilizing StatCast data to help your guys out, especially when it comes to like speed training and all. So I just want you to kind of talk us through what y'all are doing there and how it helps you in your profession to help the guys on the field.
Yeah, so StatCast has been great. So in every major league stadium, they have cameras that are focused on the field. So every time a player runs, you know, is running down first base or legging out a double, they're getting picked up on the StatCast, and it tracks their sprint speed, and it tracks their amount of sprints, their volume over the course of a game and throughout the week. And then what happens is we'll get an email each day of sprint. Anytime a guy ran a sprint trial, and it has to be 95% or above their maximum sprint speed in order for StatCast to pick it up. When that happens, we'll get an email and we'll have the number of sprints per day throughout the week. And then we can track our guys. If we don't see guys hitting top speed for 3 days, 5 days, a week, then we make sure we take them out during batting practice or before batting practice, and we expose them to high-speed sprinting as far as keeping their legs, reducing the chance of an injury, a lower extremity or lower extremity injury, and two, making sure they're staying at top speed as, looking at the performance side of things, make sure they're staying at top speed, they're staying explosive, they're not losing a step. In that aspect.
Yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. So you're mentioning the speed training components here. With younger guys, I mean, I know that y'all are taking care of their needs, but with the younger athletes, one thing that I see often is that they always want to do sprint training after strength training. And I'm not going to give my thoughts on it. I just want to ask you your thoughts on that. Do you think that's the right way to approach speed training or no? And if not, what is the ideal way to go about it?
Okay, yeah. So for the high school athlete that are playing games 2-3 times a week, they have practices during the week, I would incorporate any speed work, any agility work right after your initial warm-up for the day. That way you're fresh. You perform all those explosive movements. You can go through your normal baseball practice, all your skill practice, BP, ground balls, and then you can hit the weight room after. That's kind of how I would structure a high school. So you would do your warm-up. As soon as your warm-up's done, you can focus on acceleration drills, maybe pick 2-3 drills, 3-4 sets each, where guys are, example would be like a face-down start. I'd have your team lay down on their stomachs. And then you can blow a whistle or you can clap your hands and say, go, have those athletes get up, accelerate through 20 yards, walk back, give them about 2 minutes rest, perform that 3-4 times, and then go right into your baseball work, ground balls, BP. And then if you want to do strength training on that day, you can do it right after that.
Yep. Perfect. 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 And why is it important? Well, let me say this a different way. I think it's important for anybody who's listening to understand this. So why would it be the right thing to do sprint training before any type of strength activity?
Yeah. So you want to do your speed training or agility training when you're fresh, when your body's fresh, when your nervous system is fresh, not fatigued. If you perform these exercises, these drills after a full practice, after strength training, or just after strength training alone, you're not going to be as fresh. Your nervous system's not going to be as sharp. It's not going to be as responsive. And you could potentially have a chance of an injury there. And on the performance side, you can start training slow, where you want your athletes to be sharp, explosive, fresh. So that's one way.
Yeah. Well, perfect. All right. So, Greeny, this has been awesome and very informative. If there's anything else that you want to mention briefly, we can. But I'm just going to kind of recap what we've talked about just to kind of bring this all home. In-season versus off-season training. With the off-season, we're really trying to hammer home volume and then gradually work our way towards intensity, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yep, and then and progressing from – the young teenage years through like college years, we think like some isometric work at the beginning stages is a great way to start off, correct?
Yep, great way. You can include that in the beginning of your practice, at the end of your practice, really, at any time.
Yeah, and then we're working towards like the big general, big movements of some type of squat, deadlift, overhead lift. So vertical and horizontal pressing, vertical, horizontal rowing, and then some sort of core work. That's sort of the big ones there that we're wanting to focus on and get stronger with as we progress, right?
Yep.
And we don't have to get like super crazy on being like, it has to be crazy baseball specific at those younger ages. Just build some general strength as we're starting off, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Build some general strength and then go out and play your sport and have fun.
Yep. And then make sure you're doing your sprint work before any type of strength work. Those are the big things. So is there anything else that you want to briefly touch on before we wrap up?
Yeah, as far as the sprint work goes, yes, it's very important to perform that early in your workout or in your practice, but also you need to perform these sprints often throughout the week. So don't go more than 5 days without sprinting. You can't just sit around and just lift weights and, go about daily life without performing some max effort sprints. And it's tough when you're in the, cool environments in the off season. It's tough to be able to get that in. But if you can find a gym, you can find a hallway at your school, make sure you're exposing yourself to top speed sprints throughout the off season.
All right. Hey, I got two sort of rapid fire questions for you before we wrap up. Distance running for baseball players, good, bad?
Yeah, so distance running for pitchers, I've seen that be pretty good. I would say between younger players, position players and pitchers, you can perform that early in the off season. But then as that season approaches, the preseason, get more specific with your trainings, incorporate more short sprints, curved sprints would be important. But yeah, in general, the aerobic system does play an important role on recovery, even with explosive athletes. So you can incorporate that. If you're going to incorporate it, I would do it early on in the off season.
Perfect. But in season, not a ton of it, correct?
In season, it's tough with the major league level. Some guys do like doing that as more for their mental side of things. They like just going out and going for a good run. They feel great about it. But so it's not the end of the world. If a high school athlete wants to do that, at the major league level, we're some guys, have multiple surgeries, back surgeries, knee surgeries, hip surgeries. So to send them on a 2 mile run just kind of, it's kind of tough, but some of our younger pitchers would do that. As far as position players during the season, they don't need any long distance running. At the major league level, they're playing every single day. They're sprinting every day. If you're at the high school level, I would probably incorporate sprints throughout the week, to expose them to that. But definitely as a high school player, they shouldn't be running a mile during the season.
All right, perfect. And then last little thing here, plyometric work and recovery times between. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, so plyometrics, focus on general plyometrics, and then you can get more specific. Focus on the vertical plane, horizontal plane, lateral plane, probably most importantly. So for example, vertical jumps, any type of vertical jumps, box jump, just a regular counter movement, vertical jump, focus on the landing. And then as far as like horizontal, like broad jumps, single leg broad jumps, and then lateral, same thing, lateral bounds, lateral jumps. So perform plyometrics in all those planes of motion. You can, gradually progress these by adding weight, adding bands. Lateral broad jumps with bands,
just how important are the recovery times between like sets when it comes to this? I see a lot of the athletes turn this into like a cardio type of deal where it's just bang, 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 try to do 30 in a row instead of like 10 sets of three, right? So just what are your quick thoughts on recovery time?
Yeah, so for the recovery time for plyometrics, make sure you're fully recovered. Any speed work, any agility work, any plyometrics, make sure you're fully recovered. You're probably looking at about at least probably 2 minutes, I would say. It's tough to hold athletes off that long. They're kind of itching to go in the weight room, like, hey, I'm ready to go. Another way is to be able to hook them up to a heart rate monitor. You can do that. Once their heart rate hits like 120, 118, 119, 120, then they're probably recovered enough to go perform another sprint or a plyometric. Yeah. It should not, your speed work, your agility, your plyometric should not turn into conditioning.
Perfect answer. And anybody who trains with me better be listening to that, because it's one of the hardest things that I have to deal with inside of my facility, is that the athletes will not rest long enough. It's the hardest thing for me to get them to do. Hey, so Greeny, we're going to wrap this up, but you've got sort of a course, I guess is what you would call it, on some speed and power work, if you will. So tell people how they can find that, and also where to find you on social media.
Okay, yeah, you can find me on social media, on Instagram, just Joey Greeny, and my Twitter, also Joey Greeny. And I do have a 12-week speed and agility camp. It's delivered through the Train Heroic app. It's you get two workouts a week for 12 weeks. It's progressive. Starts out with some tempo runs and build-up sprints. Progresses into a good, nice acceleration phase that lasts about 3 weeks. That includes resistance sprinting, hill sprints, and then it progresses into more of top-end max speed, flying sprints. The agility has some cone drills, some reaction drills. So it's a great program if you're a high school kid and you're in the off season. This would be something that you should look into.
Yep. Well, perfect. Well, Greeny, this has been awesome and extremely informative. So I appreciate you coming on, man.
I appreciate you having me. It's a great conversation. I'm always looking to learn. But you take care and best of luck.
Yep. You too.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the channel so you can get notified when the latest episodes are coming out. Share it with all your friends. Leave us a review. Be sure to check me out on all the social media accounts. It's going to be @MazingoBaseball. And check out the website, MazingoBaseball.com.